just gabbing away. She hears nothing. It's wonderful.
Well, my husband's deaf. He doesn't hear anything I say anyways.
Write him long letters.
Better this way.
Yeah.
Better this way.
Yeah. I've lost some of my hearing over the years. And I said, I can't hear you. I can't hear you.
How's everybody doing?
Good. Oh,
thank God. How are you, Rabbi?
Good. Baruch Hashem. Thank you. Okay. Let's get my papers ready over here. So today I want to begin one of the, I guess, the more complex stories of the Chumash. It's one that I think will take us a few weeks to discuss. It could take even longer, but we'll give it a few weeks, you know, not to stay on it too long. But it's the story of the sale of Yosef, Mechiras Yosef. Now, the sale of Yosef is a very, we'll call it, intricate story. There's a lot of pieces to it. It's very complicated in the sense that we're dealing with people, the Shiftei Kah, the tribes of Hashem, people that we view as great tzaddikim, as very righteous people, people that we look at as role models, as our ancestors. But yet the act they do seems to us to be so foreign and so heinous. We have to understand exactly where was it coming from. There's a lot to learn from the story. It can be broken down into a lot of different elements. On the one hand, it's hard to defend such an action and justify it. On the other hand, you're dealing with people of this stature, of this caliber, the tribes, the sons of Yaakov, you know, we have to explain it in a way which does justify it, because you know, these are people that we view as righteous tzaddikim. And it's very hard to view people who might attempt murder or kidnap as righteous, but we do view them as righteous despite the fact they kidnapped and sold off their brother. Ultimately, Hashem was displeased by this, it seems. The Gemara discusses that there was a lot of blame put onto the tribes because of this action. The Meshech Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha of Divinsk, he says that the roots of all sins, which are Benam L'Chavero, of interpersonal relationships, comes from this action, comes from this story. Meaning that the most grievous sin between us and Hashem in the Chumash was Chedah Egel, the golden calf. And the most outrageous sin between us and our fellow Jew was the sale of Yosef. That's the Meshech Chachma puts it. So just as we look at the golden calf as really a horrible story and incident in the history of Klal Yisrael, we view this in the same way. However, on the other hand, we have to be able to understand who they are. And these are the tribes of Hashem. We call them the Shiftei Kah. Their names are engraved upon the Kohen Gadol's breastplate. We all descend from these and look at them as our great ancestors. So we have to understand the story from all perspectives. I think it's an important way to look at it. And we'll break down the story into, I think, four different parts. The first part, which is today's discussion, is why did the brothers hate Yosef so much? What did Yosef do that caused them to hate him? And where was hatred coming from? And was the hatred justified? Is there some way to justify that hatred? Where was it coming from? Why was it there? That's number one. Number two is to understand the actual sale itself. How did it transpire? What happened on that day where they sold their brother? Number three, there's the story of Yosef in Egypt. Now, Yosef was sold into Egypt as a slave. He spent time as a servant in Potiphar's house. He then spent time in jail. And then he became the second in command to Pharaoh in Egypt. So there's a lot in that story as well. And then there is Yosef dealing with his brothers when he came to Egypt later on in the story. What was his plan for his brothers? They came. He did not reveal himself initially. He seemed to, you know, he was messing around with them. He was fooling them. You know, he put Shimon in prison. He sent them back to their father to bring back Benjamin. There was this whole game Yosef played with them. What was that game he played with them? So those are four different parts of the story. We'll try to address each one individually over the next couple of weeks. But I think it's important to understand each part on its own right and to see, well, where it fits into what we view as the development of Klal Yisrael. Ultimately, we'll learn about this later on. The rabbis see this as all part of Hashem's intricate plan. Hashem had a plan to bring us into exile in Egypt in one way or the other, and this brought us to Egypt, this sale. But the people involved are still liable for what they did. So again, it has to be seen from so many different angles and so many different parts, and we have to really break it down piece by piece and get what's going on. So let's begin. If you have your Chumash, we're on page 199 in the Stone Chumash. We're going to begin. This is the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. And let's just read the first few verses here just to get the context. Verse 1, Jacob settled in the land of his father's sojournings, in the land of Canaan. Verse 2, these are the chronicles of Yaakov. Yosef, at the age of 17 years, was a shepherd with his brothers by the flock. But he was a youth with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Yosef would bring evil reports about them to their father. So the initial explanation of Yosef has a lot of different pieces to it. Let's try to break down verse 2 into all its parts. Number 1, it says in the Hebrew, Roeh Sechav Batzon. He used to be involved as a shepherd with his brothers. That's number 1. Number 2, it says, Vehu Na'ar. He was a youth. So what we're describing, that he was a youth. Number 3, it says that he was a youth with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah. So it sounds like he had some special connection to Bilhah and Zilpah's children and a different relationship to Leah's children. So how do you differentiate between Bilhah and Zilpah's children and Leah's children? Number 4, it says he would bring evil reports about his brothers to his father, which does not get you on your brother's good side. That much we know. So I want to look at all 4 of these points and understand what exactly are we describing about Yosef, because this seems to be the foundation of who Yosef was and why the brothers hated him so much. So first, let's understand this idea. He was Roeh Esechav. He was a shepherd with his brothers. So, I mean, simply, we know that Yaakov, really all the Avos, Yaakov included, and his children were all shepherds by trade. That was how they made their money. They made a living as shepherds. We know that. The wording, he was Roeh Esechav Batzon, is a funny wording. It doesn't say that he shepherded the sheep. He was Roeh Esechav Batzon. He was a shepherd with his brothers of the sheep. So commentaries describe, what exactly are we pointing out here? So the Sforno says, number 1, this already would get him on his brother's bad side. He used to always sort of tell them how they could do a better job. He was Roeh Esechav. He would shepherd his brothers with the sheep, meaning he used to give his brothers different pointers. You know, maybe it's better to bring the sheep over there. You should lead the sheep this way. You should turn it that way. I don't know how to be a shepherd, so I can't tell you what he said exactly. But he would give them tips. He would try to teach them how to become better shepherds. So even if his intentions were good, we know that that gets on our nerves sometimes when people are telling us what to do and telling us we could do a better job. So they have their little brother. Remember, Yosef was one of the youngest. You know, he was the 11th out of 12 children. He was their younger little brother. And I hate to say it this way, he was like an annoying little kid to them. He was telling his older brothers, you could do so much better. So Yosef was very smart. And it's very possible Yosef knew how to do better. Maybe, you know, it seems like he was right. But to have your little brother speak to you in this way, which they felt was maybe patronizing, that got on their nerves. That's number 1. Rav Hirsch explains a very interesting thing. When it says that he was Roeh Esechav Batzon, he would shepherd with his brothers the sheep. So Rav Hirsch says that Yosef's relationship with his brothers was purely at work, meaning at home, he didn't really interact with them very much. He was an outsider, he was a loner. His main interaction with his brothers was when he was working at the with the sheep. That was primarily with Bnei Leah, Leah's children. With Bilhah and Zilpah's children, he had more interaction. But even there, it says that he would interact with the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, the wife of his father. They aren't referred to as his brothers. They're referred to as the children of his father's wives. Why is that? Because the relationship wasn't so brotherly. His connection was more distant. These are my father's wife's children, but not my brothers. That was the connection they had. So Rav Hirsch explains that Yosef really was treated this way and felt like an outcast in his family. He was motherless. His mother died when he was young. Rachel had already passed away. And brotherless. I mean, he had 11 brothers, but he kind of felt on his own still. Benjamin was much younger than him. Benjamin was still a little kid. And all of his older brothers didn't want to connect with him in any way. So Yosef, as a youth, on the one hand, he used to teach his brothers and try to show them what to do, which got on their nerves. And the relationship was a little rocky, it seems. And at home, he felt very alone, very distant from them. He wasn't at home with his brothers, if you put it that way. He didn't feel comfortable with his brothers. The Bnei Ashvachos, the children of the maidservants, the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, were the ones he may have been closest to, based on the Pasuk. And there could have been a relationship here that Yosef kind of, they kind of submitted themselves to Yosef. Why? Because Yosef was so smart and excelled in so many ways. And they were children of maidservants. It could be that they actually submitted to him a little bit. And he had this relationship with them. He was kind of like the, you know, the powerful older brother that would be controlling in a certain sense. I don't know, controlling, but you know, he demanded the respect. But it wasn't a healthy relationship in the fact they were all equals. It could be they actually submitted themselves, subdued themselves before Yosef in some way. And Yosef liked this. He liked being on top. It says he was a nar. He was a youth. So the it's a funny description if you just sense the Hebrew terms. It sounds like it's using the word youth, kind of like a verb. You know, he acted, we'll call it childish, if you want to put it that way. And what does it mean he acted childish? So the Rashbam says that all of his youthful fun was only with the brother, with the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, and not with Leah's children. So on the one hand, yes, he was a kid, and you're supposed to have a good time with your brothers, but Leah's children shunned him totally, and his good times he had were only with Bilhah and Zilpah's children. Rashi says, furthermore, hunar means not just he was having a good, fun, kid-like experience, but he acted childish. He did a little called a maisa nairus. You know, in Yiddish terms, a nar means like a fool. So in Hebrew, nar means like a kid, a lad. But there's a pejorative sense to it, you know, in the sense that you're acting foolish. You know, you're acting like a little kid. So when it says hunar, so Rashi says, he used to do things that were childish, maybe a little bit self-centered. Rashi says he would play with his hair. He had beautiful hair. He had kind of fondle his hair. He's very focused on his looks. He wanted to look pretty. And ultimately, you know, Yosef's mother, Rachel, we said was Yafas Torah, Yafas Mara. She was beautiful. And Yosef was beautiful. It says later on in the Pasuk, he was Yafei Toar. He was a beautiful person. He's very handsome. So he actually had very good looks. And Rashi says, unfortunately, he sort of focused too much on his looks. So we're already building up a person here, which on the one hand is an extremely impressive person. He's a young kid, very smart, very good looking, probably a lot of charisma, probably a lot of leadership skills. But yet, as a younger brother, bringing this out to your older brothers, that could definitely engender some ill will, because our younger brother thinks he's so special, and he's so smart, he's so handsome, you know, et cetera. He's telling us what to do, and that was aggravating for them. The Sephorno says that hunar, it says he acted childish. It means that Yosef didn't understand where his actions would take him. We know that one of the differences between a child and a mature adult is to see the outcome of your actions. Meaning often, we want to react the same way a kid reacts. We do, but we hold it in. Why? Because we're adults and mature, and we know if we do that, it's going to lead to something bad. A kid doesn't hold it in. A kid does what they want to do no matter what, and they don't see the outcome of their actions. So if Yosef understood where these actions would take him, he may have stopped. But he was a child. He was a kid. He acted like a kid and didn't see where the actions would go. What would be the consequence of these actions? It was a bit impulsive. The word na'ar, which is used, again, the word in Hebrew na'ar means a child. It relates to the word na'ar, which means to shake something up, like movement, shaken up. Mena'ar is to shake something. And the idea often is that a child moves impulsively. A child is doing this, doing that, this way, that way, this mood, that mood, you know, give me this, I want this, I want to do this. And that's a childish attitude in that they don't think through situations. They don't act based on thought. And, you know, there's no method to their thinking. It's just they do, which has its positive aspects to it. That's why a child can accomplish a lot of energy, they can do a lot. A teenager, let's say. But it could also lead to bad things because they're too impulsive. So he was a very, very smart child, but he was short-sighted. He had the short-sightedness of a child, of a teenager, which didn't see where his actions would take him. So he might be your quintessential teenager with a lot of talent and potential, but he didn't know how to actually channel it as a youth. You know, I hate to speak negatively about Yosef at Tzaddik, but I'm just telling you what the commentaries say. So it's not my opinion. I'm just reading you the commentaries. It then says he would take dibas samra. He would spread evil reports about his brothers to their father, to Yaakov. So on the one hand, it sounds like he was a bit of a tattletale. You know, if he saw things going on that weren't quite right, he would always go tell them to his father immediately. Commentaries say he would tell their father if they weren't doing a good job with the sheep. He would tell their father if they did things that appeared sinful. So he used to always bring back the bad reports to their father. Now, so let's put this in context. I mean, was Yosef that foolish? I mean, again, we're talking about Yosef at Tzaddik, somebody we view as a very righteous, as one of the role models of Jewish history. Why was he acting this way? So I think, in short, the way to describe it is that Yosef was somebody who was destined for greatness. He was somebody who was most closely resembled his father, Yaakov. He had Yaakov's traits, the rabbis teach us. He was somebody that really was there to carry on Yaakov's legacy. He happened to be, like we said, very talented, very smart, very charismatic, very good looking. It was all true, very strong. He was young, and he seems to have held himself higher than the others, and he held them to his standards, which I think is the issue. Meaning sometimes you maybe are ahead of others. Maybe you're smarter. Maybe you're more righteous. Maybe you're more good looking. But you can't hold others to your standards. And the problem often is that you have to hold others to their standards. So if Yosef said, you know, I'm a very skilled shepherd, and I'm extremely intelligent, and I'm extremely good looking, and I'm extremely righteous, so everyone should be like me. If I see somebody doing something that's not exactly like me, not fitting to my standards, it's wrong. I can't tolerate it. I have to tell our father. And the answer is, on the one level, yes, everyone should be striving to perfection. On the other hand, it's not your place to have everybody be like you. No, there are ways to help people improve. Everyone has their own struggles and challenges. Not everybody is made in the same way as we are. And therefore, why are you holding your brothers to your standards? But Yosef, being that he was, on the one hand, a cut above the rest, but on the other hand, he was a teenager and acted a little bit childish and foolish. I mean, he got himself into trouble in that way. So he was indeed smart and skilled and handsome, and all, he was the whole package in his potential. But he had to learn how to apply it to others around him, and there he was challenged. It's very interesting that one of the first king, Shaul HaMelech, King Saul. So Shaul HaMelech descended from Binyamin. Now, Binyamin and Yosef were full brothers, both children of Rachel. And we often associate the two as having a similar traits, you know, and a similar destiny. Shaul also is described in the beginning as somebody who was literally cut above the rest. It says that when we say the term head and shoulders above the rest, it's actually a quote from the Navi about Shaul HaMelech. He was head and shoulders above the rest. It says, Mishichmo ulamayla mikol Yisrael. He was somebody that the rabbis say never sinned in his life until he took the throne. He was really somebody who he was handsome, he was smart, he was tall, he was everything, the whole package. He also fell into the trap. Later on, his arrogance got to him, and he ended up sinning, Shaul HaMelech. And Yosef is similar, and says, I'm not calling Yosef arrogant, but Yosef was somebody that was actually cut above the rest. He was somebody that was most destined to carry on Yaakov's legacy, but yet he had to learn how to associate with others in his youth, and there he had trouble. So that's what Pasuk Beis, that verse 2 is describing, and it gives us a basic background to who Yosef was and to why there was such tension and animosity between him and his brothers. Let's look at verse 3, Pasuk Gimel. It says, now Yisrael loved Yosef more than all of his sons, since he was a child of his old age, and he made him a fine woolen tunic. So this is the famous coat of Yosef, the coat of many colors, the coat which Yosef had as a token of his father's love. And that did not do much good to improve the relationship he had with his brothers. You know, they felt more embittered by the fact that Yosef is being shown this extra display of love from their father that they didn't get. Now I want to go back for a moment and discuss this idea. Why did Yaakov love Yosef more than the other brothers? Why? So the Netziv, in his commentary, the Hamak Dover, he points out that the name used here for Yaakov is the name Yisrael. We know that Yaakov's name was changed to Yisrael, but the Torah often reverts back to Yaakov again. Meaning, if you read all the different chapters of the Torah after Yaakov's name was changed, his name seems to vary, it alternates. He's called occasionally Yaakov is called occasionally Yisrael. So the Netziv says that the name Yisrael, it denotes the more spiritual aspect of Yaakov. And then Yaakov, that denotes the more physical aspect of Yaakov. His lower elements are called Yaakov, and his higher elements are called Yisrael. So it says that Yisrael loved Yosef more than all the other children. It means that he connected with his spiritual traits. I mean, he didn't love Yosef because Yosef was so good looking or so smart. He loved him because Yosef's spiritual traits were very much in line with Yaakov's spiritual traits. Now, we look at Yosef as, like I said before, the one who was most destined to emulate Yaakov and to carry on Yaakov's legacy. Now, in the English, it says he was a child of his old age. But often you have to look, as I always say, at the Hebrew to understand that term. It says, ki ben zekunim hulo. Yisrael loved Yosef because Yosef was a ben zekunim. What's a ben zekunim? So one understanding is, like the English explains here, the article English says he's the son of his old age. Yosef is born as Yaakov is older, and he has special love for Yosef as being a son of his old age. Binyamin was younger than Yosef, but Binyamin, the Chizkuni says that Binyamin was not Yaakov's favorite child because Binyamin's birth was when Rachel died. And when Yaakov thought of Binyamin, he thought of Rachel's death. So he had trouble connecting with Binyamin in the same way, with that deep love. So Yosef is Rachel's son. Rachel did not die upon Yosef's birth. Yosef is born in Yaakov's old age. And Yosef had the traits of Yaakov, so he loved him more than the other sons. Rashi says that Yosef was the one to which Yaakov passed on his teachings. And he also says that Yosef had similar appearance and traits to Yaakov. So Yaakov, in a sense, saw himself living on through Yosef. He saw Yosef is, you know, all my sons are great, but Yosef is really my protege. He is the one to carry my legacy. And he loved him. So he made him his famous cult, this Ksonis Pasim. So commentaries discuss, what does it mean, Ksonis Pasim? Again, the article English here is a fine woolen tunic. Some discuss the idea of it being full of different colors, which is a famous concept. Some say just the idea of pasim means it was a very fine type of fabric, but it was a very, very expensive, beautiful coat. Now, why would Yaakov give him this coat? What was Yaakov's goal in this? I mean, Yaakov, of course, did not want to create hatred and tension amongst his children. So why did he want to make him this coat? So the coat certainly gave Yosef an elevated status. I mean, as Yaakov saw Yosef as really the successor to all of Yaakov's accomplishments, he saw Yosef as the head, as the top of all the tribes. He wanted to give him the elevated status. Now, the Gemara blames Yaakov for this. The Gemara says that Yaakov made a mistake in doing this. The Gemara says that because of this extra fabric that Yaakov used to make Yosef a coat, he showed favoritism to one son. This is what caused the Jews to go to exile in Egypt. It's because of the means in the story, this is what led to it. That coat brought out their jealousy. The jealousy led to the selling of Yosef, and that led them into Egypt. So the Gemara says that you should never show favoritism between your children, because when Yaakov did this, look at the results. So the Gemara says Yaakov was wrong about this. It's a bad idea to show favoritism to a child, that's for sure. This caused friction, this caused jealousy. But what was Yaakov's goal? Why did Yaakov do this? So I have a theory. I don't know if it's right. I don't have a source for this. But my theory is, you know, Yaakov as a child had a similar issue. He had a brother, Esav. And his father, it said, loved Esav. His mother loved Yaakov. And this led to a lot of friction in Yaakov's family. Yaakov had to go in and steal the brachos from his father Yitzchak because Yitzchak wanted to give brachos to Esav. So Yaakov as a child also, the parents showed favorites and it caused a problem. But part of the problem was the parents chose different favorites. I mean, Rivka, it says, loved Yaakov and Yitzchak loved Esav. So I think Yaakov now wanted to be 100% clear. This is the son that's going to carry on the legacy. There shouldn't be anything vague, no confusion. It should be 100% clear that this is the one that's going to be my successor. So he gave him this coat to give him the status symbol. Because Yaakov knew if different parents have different goals for different children and don't see which one's supposed to be the one to carry on the legacy, that leads to a lot of friction in the household and problems. So it could be because of his experiences, he wanted to be very, very clear who the successor will be. So that's my theory. I don't know if it's right. But that could have been Yaakov's goal. Ultimately, what Yaakov did, the rabbis say, was wrong. They say that led to a lot of problems. and Yaakov should not have shown favoritism, but Yaakov did. And I would justify Yaakov's intent as being that. He went very clear who the next successor to the legacy of Abraham is going to be. In verse 4, it says his brothers saw that it was he whom their father loved most of all of his brothers, so they hated him, and they could not speak to him peaceably. So even until now, we saw tension building. But once Yaakov gave the coat to Yosef, the brothers could no longer speak to him in a peaceful manner. You know, we know sometimes you could be upset with somebody, and as much as you try to speak to them in a positive, you know, happy, gentle manner, it's just very hard to do it. And at this point, they could no longer be friendly to Yosef. Rav Hirsch says, all the interaction became negative, and nothing more could bring to peace or friendship amongst his brothers at this point. That's how they felt. So things had really become very negative once that coat was given to Yosef. Now, from verse 5 to verse 11, we have Yosef coming in to describe his dreams. I'm not going to read it in the text, but we'll discuss them outside of the text quickly. Yosef had two famous dreams. The first dream was that they're all together binding sheaves of wheat in the middle of a field, and the sheaf of Yosef rose up and stood up standing, and all the other sheaves bowed down to Yosef's sheaf. So that was supposed to be symbolic, all the brothers bowing down to Yosef. So the brothers said to him, are you going to reign over us? Are you going to dominate us? What are you trying to say? And that caused hatred. And then in verse 9, he had another dream. He says, I dreamt that there was the sun, the moon, and 11 stars, and they're all bowing down to me. So the 11 stars were the brothers. The sun and the moon were his father and his mother, seemingly. And everyone was bowing down to Yosef. So in verse 10, it says, he told this dream to his father and his brothers. His father scolded him. He said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamt? Are we to come, I and your mother and your brothers, to bow down to the ground? And this caused even more jealousy. And then in verse 11, it says, so his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. So these two dreams led to the real issue, meaning everything was building up. There was tension building up. It was like a pressure cooker ready to explode. And once he relayed these two dreams to his brothers, things really went awry. There was a lot of animosity. Now let's discuss the idea of dreams for a second. I mean, why do the dreams matter? Like, we all dream. Who cares about dreams? So the rabbis do tell us that dreams can actually be a form of prophecy. Not every dream is that way. The rabbis discuss three forms of dreams. One form of dreams is totally false. One form of dreams is just a product of your thoughts during the day. It's not telling you anything new. And then the third form of dreams is actually an element of prophecy. The rabbis say that a dream could be a shishis minavua, could be a 60th of prophecy. So it's not a direct communication from Hashem in the sense like a prophet would get, but a dream could carry a message for the future. It really could. I mean, I think that even nowadays, people could have dreams that do have a sense of the future. Sometimes you'll go through an experience in life, and you'll think, hey, I remember that in a dream like years ago. I think people have that sometimes. It's out there. And the idea is that a dream at times could be a form of prophecy. So these dreams, the brothers and Yaakov felt were prophetic in some way. The Netziv says that initially, the brothers thought that Yosef was dreaming in this way, not because they're prophetic, but because since Yosef during the day was fantasizing about being the ruler over his brothers, so that he dreamed that way. Meaning initially they said these are not prophetic at all. It's because our brother Yosef wants to be powerful. He's power hungry. He wants to lord over us. So all day long, he's daydreaming about ruling over us. So night when he sleeps, what does he dream about ruling over us? And they dismissed the dreams. That was on the first dream. So it created hatred, but not jealousy, because they dismissed it. They said, we're not jealous of his future role, but we hate him for thinking this way. And they dismissed the dreams. But in the second dream, Yaakov himself interprets it. In the second dream, Yaakov says, do you think that I and your mother and your brothers are going to bend down to you? And Yaakov took it seriously. It says that Yaakov kept the matter in mind. So at the second dream, the brothers said, this is not just Yosef's personal fantasies and daydreams. this could be prophetic. This could be the destiny of where we're going over here. And when their father took it seriously, the brothers got jealous. It wasn't just hatred. There was also jealousy involved as well. Now, ultimately, the dreams we know are not, even a dream which has a prophetic element is not totally true. And this is one of the sources. It says over here that, do you think that your father and your mother and your brothers have been unto you? His mother was already dead. Rachel had already died several years before. So his mother was not going to bow down to him ever. And that part of the dream is false. That wasn't prophetic. But even dreams that have in them elements that are false also have true elements in them as well. And that the rabbis tell us, that even a true dream has false elements to it included. But the second dream Yaakov took seriously, Yaakov, it says, Aviv Shomer Sadar, Yaakov was waiting. Yaakov, as it were, he seemed to know this would come true one way or the other. He took it seriously. He saw it as a reality. And he said to he scolded Yosef for sharing the dream. But it seems like Yaakov took it seriously and he felt it could come true. So the situation is developing. And ultimately, we have to figure out, you know, what's going to influence the tribes to sell him. But we see it. But we see the tension. We see their attitude towards Yosef. And you have to wonder, why did Yosef share these dreams with his brothers? What was Yosef's goal over here? It's not so clear, but it sounds like it's all, Yosef did not have any negative attitude towards them. Yosef was just sharing what he was told. You know, he didn't seem to, I don't know why, again, he didn't see the consequence of his actions, as we said before. He didn't realize where this is going to take him. He didn't get it. But the brothers now are very upset and jealous of where it's going to go. Now, ultimately, we can't excuse the brothers for selling him, meaning a kidnapping, selling a brother to slavery is not an excusable action. But like I said before, we have to justify what was done. Like, what was their rationale? That's their rationale. I mean, as much as their sibling rivalry, we don't expect siblings to sell each other to slavery. That's just not something the siblings do. Or contemplate murder. They almost killed Yosef. Again, and these are the Shiftei Kah. These are the tribes of Hashem. These are people who look at as role models and as holy men. So we see that we see why their jealousy or hatred may be justified. But the actual act of selling Yosef has to be explained. What were they thinking when they sold Yosef? I want to address that a little bit now as well. Like I said before, the sages see this as a terrible act. And they say that we still suffer to this very day because of this heinous crime. Meaning that the sale of Yosef was a sin on the caliber of Cheta Egel, of the golden calf, and the punishment for it remains thus this very day. So that we understand was wrong. But what was going on in their minds when they plotted to sell or to kill Yosef? So I want to share with you maybe just two thoughts of this. Commentaries speak about this at length. But I want to share with you two thoughts on this topic. The main commentary on the Chumash that really discusses this question is the Sforno. And the Sforno actually, he phrases the question as we said. We have to be able in some way to justify their actions because we know that Hashem sees these people as righteous, as holy men. Their names will be inscribed upon the Kohen Gadol's breastplate in the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, and all of Klal Yisrael descends from these 11, 12 men. So we have to be able to see their action in some way as justified, even though it was wrong. So how do we justify it? So one of the key verses to understanding how we justify the action is later on. We'll talk about it more probably next week. But at least to look at it right now. Yosef later on is sent to see how his brothers are doing in Shechem. His brothers go to the city of Shechem to pasture their flock. And Yosef is sent by their father to check on them. So as Yosef approached his brothers in Shechem, the Torah tells us, "Vayisnaklu oso lahamiso." This is in pasuk Yud Ches, verse 18. So literally, "Vayisnaklu lo lahamiso," you would translate as they plotted or conspired against him to kill him. That seems to be the simple understanding of it. They conspired against Yosef to kill him. But the Sforno says, you have to know the grammar of that word better, vayisnaklu. So the word vayisnaklu, the Sforno says, doesn't mean they conspired against him. He says that it means that they projected onto Yosef, the Yosef had to conspire to kill them. Meaning it wasn't that they conspired against Yosef, But they, in a certain sense, had demonized Yosef to the extent that when they were away peacefully pasturing the sheep in Shechem, and Yosef is sent to go check on them, they think that Yosef is on his way to either kill them or to somehow cause them to sin and get them into trouble, to frame them, to set them up in some way. But they think that Yosef is coming to do harm to them. That's what they think. So why would they think that? Well, because that seems to be Yosef's entire relationship with them was very negative. I'm going to lord over you. You're going to bow down to me. I'm better than you. I know better than you. I'm smarter than you. I'm more handsome than you. So they think that Yosef's out to get them. And we know there's a principle. Abola hargecha, hashkim lahargo. If someone comes to kill you, you can kill them first. So they think that Yosef is here to do harm. So in self-defense, they wanted to rise up against him and stop him in his tracks. That's what this Sforno says. They're righteous people. And for them, this feeling was real. It was based on emotions of hatred and jealousy, is what the Torah is telling us. But in their minds, Yosef was on his way to do something very bad to them, and they had to stop it. That's how the Sforno explains it. But I want to share with you a little bit more of an explanation from Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch, in his beautiful way, describes at length what the brothers were thinking. And he gives a little bit more of a context to the thought process. So Rav Hirsch first says, ever since Yosef's last dream, the brothers were so troubled. Why? So I'll read to you a quote from Rav Hirsch. He says, but when they now heard the last dream, which promised Yosef the highest majesty on earth, and saw how their father took it seriously, they got very upset. Why? Because they had been deeply impressed in their minds that the harmony of their rights was threatened by Yosef. And that was why they went away. Meaning the brothers felt very threatened by him. They felt, we are designated to be the tribes of Klal Yisrael. We're here to work together as a united family to bring Hashem's name to the world. Each of us has something to offer the world. We have a role in Klal Yisrael, and we're meant to express ourselves individually in our roles. If one brother is going to lord over the rest, he's going to be the one to take over all the tribes. We're all going to have to subdue ourselves to him. It's going to take away our independence. He's going to ruin the entire concept of the 12 tribes and of Klal Yisrael. So they left. They went to Shechem. Rav Hirsch says that Shechem was about 80 kilometers away from where Yaakov was in Hebron. So they went afar, you know, this was before the time of cars. 80 kilometers is a long way to go. Now imagine going like 50 miles on foot. It's a long way to go. They went to Shechem, and they went to preserve their independence, Rav Hirsch says. They wanted to be away from Yosef. They wanted to do their own thing. They themselves had a nice relationship, all the other brothers. There was harmony amongst them, and they banded together to do what was right. Now, why did they go to Shechem? So we spoke about Shechem a few weeks ago. Shechem was the city where Dinah was kidnapped, and the brothers banded together to recover their sister from the kidnapping. So Shechem was a place, or even though at the end, Shimon and Levi did something which we saw was murderous, you know, they went in and they killed out the city, but the brothers had united in during that instance. The brothers united together to save their sister. So Shechem actually stood as a place of unity for the Jewish people. The brothers had remembered when our sister was kidnapped in Shechem, we came together as one family and we stuck up for our sister. We defended her honor. Rav Hirsch says, if in Shechem, the whole family was able to stand together, united, when one was threatened from the outside, how much more must they stick together when the honor and independence of the whole family is threatened from the inside? When they felt that Yosef was threatening the family, they said, let's go to Shechem, let's band together, let's unite once again as a family and defend ourselves against Yosef. And they were very concerned that Yosef would be a tyrant. They said, our cousins, the children of Esav, they're already enslaved under kings in Seir, as we discussed last week. So there was already, they already saw around them that the world is full of tyrants, of evil people. And they said, if Yosef takes over our family, it was just in contrast to such a dictatorship where the inhabitants were considered as mere bricks for building up the fame and ambition of a single dynasty. They're saying, as Klal Yisrael, as Yaakov's children, we're not meant to have one of us rule over the rest. We're not meant to have a single dynasty to be a tyrant, to be a dictator, and enslave us. Hamloch Timloch Aleinu, they said to Yosef, are you going to be the melech over us? Are you going to express rulership over all the tribes? They said, our job is to have one common mission. as a family, to guard the derech Hashem leiv Hashem, to do good, to do justice in this world. What would be of our future, the future of the world, if we too were to allow ourselves to be enchained by the ambition of one single individual? So Rav Hirsch gives it a much deeper context. They felt threatened by Yosef. Yosef was going to unravel the entire future of Klal Yisrael. We as tribes have to work together as one united front. If one brother becomes dictator and he tries to express his will over us, we're going to be enchained by his ambitions and not by the will of Hashem. That's a terrible thing. It's very interesting that ultimately, no, we do have a king. The Jews had kings, but that was considered a bad thing. I mean, when the Jews requested a king, Shmuel HaNavi, who was the prophet at the time, he got upset with them. He said, no, you have one king, Hashem. You need to have a government able to run things, but why do you want a king? What good will a king do? To have one person in charge? That's only going to lead to bad, which it did. Because ultimately, as Jews, our king is Hashem, and no individual should have to impose his will upon us. That's not how we should function. And we saw historically, we saw when the Jews actually ended up with the king, bad things eventually happened. I mean, David HaMelech was great, and Shlomo HaMelech was great, but after that, things really went downhill. Interestingly enough, Rav Hirsch points out, where did the kingdom split? Now, after Shlomo HaMelech, when there was a big uprising, and the kingdom split into two, to Malchus Yehuda and Malchus Yisrael, King Yeravam ruled over Israel and Rechavam ruled over Yehuda. That split occurred in Shechem, the same place as we're discussing right now where the brothers went to be independent from kings. It was there where people banded together again. They tried to impress their own individual rights upon Yeravam and the kingdom split. And Rechavam, sorry, upon Rechavam and the kingdom split. Ultimately, Shechem was a place where negative happened, not positive. But our first gives us, I think, a very important understanding of the brothers' attitude. They said Yosef is a threat to the future of Klal Yisrael. He's a threat to the tribes and a threat to the tribe's destiny. He's a threat to us acting as one united front, as individuals serving Hashem, and bringing the light of Hashem to the world. He's going to come in, become a dictator, rule over us, and everything that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were working so hard to bring to the world, Yosef is going to backtrack. He's going to bring it back to a situation where we're enslaved under a dictator and not able to actually express ourselves individually in terms of bringing justice and peace and righteousness to the world. So that was the brother's attitude, according to Rav Hirsch, as Yosef approached them. So we'll stop there for the week. But I think we see where it's coming from. We see why there was such tension and why the brothers felt threatened. On the other hand, you can't justify such an action. But you have to know there was actually a real thought process here, a thought process that was with the proper intentions for the sake of Hashem, Hashem Shemayim. But they took it a little bit too far. When we'll see next week, we'll talk about how they threw him in the pit and almost killed him. We'll get to that next week.
Shabbat Tov, Chodesh Tov.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Everyone have a great week.